You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Phillies Backstage. I'm Tom Burgoyne, joined by John Brazier, Director of Fun and Games. And, John?
We are in the offseason, Tom, officially. We are in the offseason.
But some other seasons are getting going.
Yep, you got the Sixers starting up pretty soon. The Eagles, obviously, in full swing. And you have the Flyers, have already had a couple games under the belt. And who better to bring on for our podcast is our buddy Lou Nolan. Lou, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys. Nice to be on. Thank you.
Yeah, awesome, Lou. It's great to hear you. You know, we see each other every once in a while. I know you like some of the banquets, that Philadelphia Sports Writers Banquet. We see you there every year. And I don't know, we always run into you somewhere along the line. But how you doing? You feeling good?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I am. I'm feeling pretty good. I think there's more than one of me. That's what happened. You know? It's cloned, and there's more than one of me.
Hey, Lou, I think
who knows
you,
where I could be.
I think you were the PA announcer, I believe, for some of the alumni games of which I was lucky enough to partake in. Joe Watson invited me out to play in some of those alumni games. So I believe you were there. You were doing the PA announcing, right? Do you do the alumni games?
I believe
games?
I was, yes. Yeah. You're a Haverford School guy, you know?
Exactly
my
right.
My son was.
That's right.
He's a player there, so.
Yeah, I played there.
That's something you never forget, Lou. Yeah, it's not something you never forget, watching John trying to play hockey against the Broad Street Bullies.
No, I'm with the Broad Street Bullies.
Oh, is that how
no,
that
yeah, we played again. I was on with the team. I was playing against, like, some, you know, all-star men's league team.
So the Hound doesn't take a running start and
no,
try to slam you into the boards?
Take on his teammate. Come on.
Did they try to set you up, John? I don't recall.
They did.
Did they try to feed you the puck?
Well, the first game I played, it was pretty funny. I was nervous, as you can imagine. And I figured youth is on my side, right? So I just, but I ended up skating like a chicken with my head cut off. And I remember that my first play, and you'll love this. My first play was I was playing left wing, and the defenseman sends it up the boards for a breakout, and it glances off my stick. Now, I didn't lose it because the defenseman's backing up, and all I can hear is Joe Watson yelling at me going, "You blank, 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 you blank, 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 get that blank and puck." And I was already nervous, and that just made me a little more nervous. So I didn't do anything my first game, but I did play again. Reggie Leach was our coach, and I actually they did set me up. They said, just get in the slot. And thanks to Michel Petit and some other guys, I scored a hat trick in the first period, and that was my
look at that.
Probably my biggest hockey glory moment.
They set
moment.
You up big time.
They did set me up. Yes. Oh.
There you go. You know, you probably got to do my leg stick.
Exactly. Right. I think it was a coho, my old coho. I stayed with the wooden stick, too. I never really got into the, you know, there's fiberglass and the ones that separate, and you got to buy the shaft and the blade. No, I was an old school one wooden stick.
I do envy you, John, because, I mean, to be able to play with the Broad Street Bullies, I mean, that would have been – I mean, if you had told my, you know, 10-year-old self, 12-year-old self that I would have gotten a chance to play with those guys, it would have blown my mind. So it must blow your mind that you
it
had this great experience.
Yes, exactly.
Ah, well, Lou. We're we were just – before you came on, John and I were just talking about Dan Baker, his 50th year, your 50th year, and how lucky we are in Philadelphia to have just great PA announcers and guys who are just so part of the community and part of their team and identified so much with your team. Did you know Dan when you first got started? Did you guys kind of meet and trade notes? You were both young and getting started.
Yeah, we kind of did. You know, our seasons are opposite, so but we see each other at events. And you know, I will say that he is one of the most wonderful guys I've ever met. You know, along with you two, of course.
of course.
Yeah. But Dan's a wonderful guy. And yeah, we did. Trade notes, I don't know. You know, we're working two different sports.
Yeah.
He had different guys that he liked to talk about, the Morandinis and, you know, people like that. And I had, you know, Simon Gagné. I had more French guys. So, you know, it was kind of different. We had a good time. We talked to one another, you know, over a cocktail somewhere.
Now, Lou, I read your book, If These Walls Could Talk. Great book. And it's still available. I was in Barnes & Noble the other day and picked it up. So I know, but tell the listeners out there, how did you get started? Everyone wants to know, you know, people that have dream jobs, of which obviously you have a dream job. How did you get started with the Flyers?
Well, I guess it's right time, right place is part of it. But I was always the guy that never believed that the basketball was coming back to my hand when I played in the neighborhood, you know, right. Even though it was round. So I couldn't dribble worth a crap. But I was a football player and soccer player and played baseball a little bit and all that. Played a little hockey in the street, things of that nature. But I first had met a guy in grade school. His uncle was a gold judge at the Ramblers. They were a team in the Eastern League way long ago. They played at the arena, which was at 46th and Market. I think it may be knocked down now. I don't know. But in any event, we used to go to those games on Friday nights. This guy, George Lennon, and I used to go with his uncle. He was the gold judge, as I mentioned. And we'd run around the rink. You know, we were rink rats. And then the end of the night, you know, all the broken sticks, we'd take them back and we'd tape them up and put our shoe skates on and go behind the school to a newly resurfaced street that not many cars got on and played. And I really enjoyed that. And, you know, I used to watch the original six on TV. You know, I was a sort of a different kind of guy. But, you know, came hockey. I remember once I was driving down to Margate to have fun and chase women. And sure enough, there was a billboard that said, the Flyers are coming, the NHL. So I said, oh, boy, look at this. It was on Route 42. So when I get down there, I meet Joe Cadillac. You guys know Joe.
Oh, of course. And, love Joe Cadillac.
He was the first PR man and the first of a whole lot of different things in the league. He doesn't get his real just due, but he should. And, you know, I said to him one day, you know, he got the PR job. He worked for the Daily News for when I first met him. And we went out to celebrate. I said, hey, I have a little background in hockey. If you need anybody to help you, let me know. So he said, I don't know. Well, maybe, who knows. Come to a cocktail party next week and we'll talk about it. Next thing you knew, I was distributing stats in the press box of the Spectrum for a couple of years there and, you know, recapping the goals on the phone in the press box area, things of that nature. And when the announcer left, I told Lou Scheinfeld, who I'd met, a wonderful guy there too, that I want to do that because it was not like there were TVs every 10 feet or less or 6 feet like there are now in press boxes. There were no TVs.
Right.
So I'd be writing and you hear a roar and you look up and, you know, guys would celebrate. So I missed thousands of goals. And I wanted to see them. So I said, well, let me get down there. I announced on the phone. Maybe I could do it down there. So I went for a audition while they were putting the third level on the building. Mm. And they had, you know, a big sand on the floor, you know, like 10, 12 inches worth of sand and blocks and stuff and cranes in there, those low-profile cranes. And I remember going over to the box where the mic was, and just as I'm set to go, you know, they cracked up the crane. So I said, excuse me, guys, I'm here for an audition. It's really important. Would you turn the crane off for 5 minutes? So they turned it off. And Scheinfeld said to me, he says, you got it. You know, I know you got the voice for it, but if that doesn't rattle you, I don't know what would. So
nice.
I started the year before the first cup. You know, timing is everything again.
And one of the previous
PA
announcers was the great Eddie Ferenz, who was the longtime Phillies traveling secretary.
Right?
Yeah, did you know that?
Absolutely.
I did not know that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. I think Gene Hart did the first two periods and then went upstairs to do the third period on radio, and Eddie jumped in and he started doing it then. Then I guess he did it for a full year or two. And then went across the street, you know, he has a lot of hockey background.
Oh, I know. He played minor league hockey, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. And he worked with the Jersey Devils when they were in Cherry Hill, Class Z League. And, you know, hey, he was a wonderful man, wonderful man. And, yeah, he was one of the predecessors. And they brought a few guys in to try it. Gene Kelly, who did some baseball, and he just didn't have a concept of what he should do. And, you know, that's how I wound up with it. The guy before me, Kevin Johnson, he went with the Blazers, Philadelphia Blazers, in the World Hockey Association when they came in. And then they moved to Vancouver after the first year, and they didn't need a Philadelphia PR man in Vancouver. So he was out, and I was already in at that point. So, you know.
And your first game was right. Something happened memorable, right? There was something with Bob Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
To tell about your first game as a PA announcer.
well, first game and first and half, really, you know, any consequence other than the welcome. You know, there was a fight. We had a lot of them back in those days, as you well know. And, I start to make the announcement, and the players weren't real happy with one another. And we used to keep the pucks in a bucket on the ice, you know, on ice, so they'd be frozen, or theoretically frozen. It wouldn't bounce all over the place. And the guy threw the ice and the pucks at Kelly, and there it was. I happened to be in the middle. So in the middle one of my announcements, I was showered with a little bath of ice and hockey pucks.
First
water.
Game. Yeah, it's your baptism.
Yeah, first,
your baptism.
First announcement, I mean. Yeah. First important announcement. So, I figured, oh, boy, this is really going to be fun.
Oh, Lou. And those early years, like, would they get decent crowds before the Flyers got good in, like, 72, 73? I guess, the following year. But were there decent crowds back then?
It was a challenge at the beginning. I remember because I would always write the attendance on the press sheet, which I created and put up together, and we'd hand that one out after the game. And they weren't tremendous. You know, when the original six team would come in, like, you know, Boston or Chicago or somebody like that, you know, they might do 8,000 or 9,000. And, then all of a sudden, and I mean, I don't know what was paid, what was not paid, but it was important that people get out and see the game, because if you don't see it in person or play it, you can't really appreciate it. You know, watching it on TV is one thing, but being there is certainly another. It started to go, and then next thing you know, I think the number was 14,646.
Yeah,
and we got a couple times that, and they changed that over the years, put seats in wherever they could. And then it was
17,077. Yeah. I know it because I could never get a ticket, Lou. I wound up going to more Sixers games. I had such a hard time getting our family, I think, getting tickets. But 17,077.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Ooh. Now, the other thing, Lou, is that when you're doing you're away from the ice now. But back then, you were on the ice, you know, as you mentioned, you know, between the two penalty boxes, and there was no plexiglass right there. You could be victim to anything from the ice, right?
And I was.
And you were.
I didn't know any better, you know. I mean, I certainly didn't know any better. And, the league never had glass in front of the announcers or the penalty boxes because the guys would always jump over. Do something like that, and you know, it never occurred to me that I should be protected. I mean, I've been dinged with hockey pucks that have been deflected and hit with sticks, and even you know, mentioned Bob Kelly again. He told me one day, he said, "Louis, I'm going to put somebody in your lap tonight." I said, "Okay, Hound." Nice. And next thing you know, the guy comes up the boards, gets a hip check, and he lands in my lap. His hand hits the clock. You know, now the clock is small and does everything. Back then it was huge and didn't do a whole lot, and all the, you know, everything went off and all the buttons were it was crazy. And the guy left, and Hound came by me winking afterward. He says, "I told you."
He called his shot.
All right.
Yep. That's right. Great hip check.
Now, one of the most I was gonna say, one of the most
real party.
Yeah,
one of the greatest moments, probably your greatest moment, I imagine, because as a Flyers fan, it was mine, but you're right there to watch it. Game six, obviously the first Stanley Cup against the Bruins. Bobby Orr gets a penalty with 2 minutes and 22 seconds left, which I'm sure he probably wasn't very happy when he got into that penalty box, since you're standing right next to him. But how excited were you when that clock's winding down? Bernie Parent told us one story where actually, I think it was not too much time left in the puck or in the game, and someone iced the puck, and Bernie wasn't paying attention. He's looking up at the scoreboard as opposed to the puck itself. And if that puck went on net, he would have went from the greatest goalie of all time to the to the goat, and not in a good goat way. So tell us about those last seconds for you.
Well, Bernie's story is great. You know, he heard it thump the boards and it's like, uh-oh. And but when he heard it thump the boards, he knew he was okay. I remember driving down to the game. I lived in Southwest Philly in a house with a couple guys, and I'm driving down to the game, and I says, you know, here it is, game six. You know, we got to win this or else we'll go to Boston and be a real problem. Because I was in Boston for the one game we won up there and changed it to a home advantage, which was great. But, you know, here we are with six, and things are going, and you know, one to nothing, and players are coming in the box and going out of the box. And anytime you play Boston, even now, it's a difficult game. You know, we have Boston tonight, and it'll be a difficult game because it's so tough. They're like that, and so are we. But, boy, oh, boy, you know, when Art Scove, I guess he was the ref, he called, you know, Clarkey shot the puck, and it bounced off somebody and went into the clear. He got it, and he's cruising down there, and Orr catches up with him, no surprise there. And, boom, you know, next thing you know, the arm's up, and was 2:22. I'm glad you remember that, John. The penalty's called, and Orr is giving him everything. He learned, you know, I learned every single word that I never knew at that point. He gets in the box, so I'm saying to myself, you know, penalty's being served, and we're killing it. And I said, you know what? We have a chance. This could happen today. And sure enough, you know, it goes 10-9-8-7-6, and bingo, the horn goes, and we won the cup. Man, there was chaos because we had low glass, and anybody that could climb climbed over the glass. And you see those things about when we tried to skate the cup around, Clarkey and Bernie trying to do it, and Schulte clearing the way for them. And, I mean, it was just nuts. It was nuts. And they do everything they can now to keep people off the ice. But and most of the time they do it, but it was chaos, and I loved it. I loved it. I mean, you know, you get a chance to drink from the cup in the locker room with all that stuff. I even took it to work one day.
Yeah. You worked in a bank, Lou, and so you brought it to work.
Yeah. They this is a good one. Joe Cadillac calls me and says, "Hey, we're going to take pictures with the Liberty Bell." It was in the old pavilion at that point. It hadn't been in its brand new home now. In Independence Hall. So I said, he said, "Do you want to go?" I said, "Sure, are you kidding me?" So I took off from work and get there and you know, a picture with myself with a cup and a Liberty Bell, which is a real keeper. And afterwards, you know, a guy named Lefty Reed was the keeper of the cup at that point. There were no white gloves. It was none of this stuff like, you know, the way you do it. It just got there. So he has it, and Joe had it in his car, brought it up in a trash bag. So we're getting it set to go. And I said, you know, Lefty, I said, the PSFS up there, there were the letters. I said, I work in there. And I said, boy, you know, people would love to see the cup. He says, well, let's take it.
Nice.
Okay. So nice. We go down, we belt it in the front of Joe's car, and we take it and put it in the parking lot downstairs, and I get it out of there, and we kept the trash bag on it till we got out of the elevator, and I basically come walking out holding the cup over my head. Now, a lot of people knew I was doing flyer stuff then, but they didn't ever expect this to happen. And
right.
Cameras came out of the woodwork. None digital, I might add, but, you know, people bought them somewhere or kept them in their desks. And
your job, you know, security was pretty good right then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in good shape. Good shape, yeah. I could do just about anything wrong, and it wouldn't be any problem.
And were the girls impressed, Lou?
Oh, yes, they were. That's how I got Lefty there. I told them, and I said, a lot of girls up there, Lefty. Yeah, we better take the cup up there. Yeah.
Hey,
so there have been a lot of great things, a lot of great stuff.
Well, another moment that I remember, and you were right in the middle of everything, the Red Army. The Red Army did a barnstorming tour, and they we had just won the cup, and they had beaten every team so far in the NHL. And they're going to play the defending champion Flyers, and I knew they were intimidated a little bit because I know that we obviously played a different style than the Russians, you know, with the skating, the finesse, and the, you know, the puck movement. Tell us about that game, and you know, I guess particularly what happened after Ed Van Imp. I guess the guy ran into Ed Van Imp's elbow.
Yeah, let me start the day before. First off, you know, I met the Russian management and a lot of their quote-unquote doctors, which were really agents of some kind. They had too many doctors. And they were at practice, and I took off again to be there and be part of it all. And, you know, a guy came out of the locker room, captain, Boris Mikhailov was his name, and he gave me a pin, you know. So I said, I don't have any, you know, to give you. And I showed him my pockets, and I took my change out, and there was a Kennedy half dollar in there. He said, "Ooh!" So he took the Kennedy half dollar, and he left. So next thing I know, the door opens, and about five or six guys peek out the door, and he says, "Rover there." He hands them. They come over, they start giving me pins, and they all want Kennedy half dollars. So I threw the interpreter. I told them, "I'll be back." And I went to the bank and got a couple of rolls, and handed them out to the guys, and I have quite a collection of pins from that group. And they, that was fine. But they went on the floor, out on the ice for practice. Those quote unquote doctors confiscated every Kennedy half dollar that I had given them. Huh. I do remember that was the Khrushchev and Kennedy with the shoe, beating the shoe and all that kind of stuff. Yep. So, I gave them a few afterwards, but, I was almost out of them at that point. So it's sad to see that, but the reality of it.
Yeah.
But, and I took a few guys to Pat Sticks, too, for cheese sticks. I told them to say one wit, you know, and they all got in line. One wit.
Wow. Did they like cheese sticks?
Oh, yeah, sure. You're kidding me. They had heard all about that.
Yeah.
They also, a busload of them went right down to downtown. This was the last game, so they bought jeans and stereo equipment and all that stuff like that to take it back to the homeland because they couldn't get it there.
Huh.
But, yeah, we took good care of them, and then we took good care of them on the ice.
Sure, yeah.
So, talk about that.
It was crazy, yeah. Right? When the elbow, again, Ed Van Imp's elbow, and the next thing you know, they walk off the ice, and you were right in the middle of it when they were talking with the Russian officials and the referees and Shiro.
Yeah, yeah. I think Lloyd Gilmore was a senior ref at that point, and he had that game, and I knew him pretty well. You knew the guys differently because you talked right to them instead of through a little hole. And sure enough, the game's going, we're hitting them and they're not happy. Next thing you know, bingo, down goes Karmiloff. And I mean, he kind of half looked up and went back down again. And Eddie always says he ran right into my elbow. You know,
right.
I couldn't believe he did that. And, then they took him over to their bench. And, the ref came over and we're talking with the interpreter and all, and I said, just trying to intimidate you, Lloyd. You know that. He says, yeah, I know. He says, why don't you give him 2 minutes for delay of the game? I said, okay. So I read off 2 minutes for delay of the game, and that was the catalyst.
Yeah.
And they, like, went berserk and started leaving. The guy said, let's go, and they all left. Now, I went over with the interpreter to find out what was going on, basically to report to the fans. And, sure enough, here comes Ed Snyder down the hallway, with his chin held high and his veins are popping out of his neck. And his face is red. His neck is red. He went right by all the guards and boom, right into their room, And nobody tried to hold him up, believe me. And he's in there about 5 minutes and he comes out. And he says, they're coming out. Okay, he leaves. We find out later he told them that if you guys don't come out, you're not getting any money because they hadn't been paid for any of the games yet. It was a single payment at the end.
Yes.
So they weren't going to get paid, and that certainly motivated them to get U.S. dollars. That's absolutely.
nice work, Ed.
And then Joe Watson, you guys know Joe. Joe scores the goal. Freddie said that goal set the Russian program back 10 years.
Yes, because he wasn't known as really a goal scorer, right? And supposedly Joe had quite
right.
the celebration when he scored that goal, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It was great. And the fans, I mean, you're in a building and you've been in when, obviously I'm not sure whether or not any of the baseball stadiums are like that. They don't have a roof on them. But, if you have a headset on, it crackles from the crowd. I mean, it's just crazy. They're making so much noise, it's electric, and it truly is electric. And that's the way it was for that Russian game.
I bet.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The electricity in the building. And I have to ask you, too, were you also in the parade, both parades, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, both of those. The first one was chaotic. We gathered in what they called the director's lounge downstairs. And a guy came in from the city. His name was Harry Berlinger. I remember this like it was yesterday. And he said, oh, we're going to get in the cars. They had Cadillacs, right? Cadillac convertibles. We're going to get in the cars, and we're going to drive up to about Pine Street. We'll start to get crowded, and then we'll go down Chestnut. We'll go over to the mall, and Kate Smith will sing, and all this stuff will happen. Well, it was from the time that we got out of the building, you almost couldn't get in the cars. I was in a car with Joe Scott and his wife, just sitting in the front, you know, with a guy driving. And I'm going to be in that parade no matter what, whoever I had to be with, but I have to get in that car. It was good. But people were passing beers in, and there was champagne in the cars already. And, we started up Broad Street, and from the time that we pulled out of the parking area, it was just wall-to-wall people. Yeah. Wall-to-wall people. They were hanging on buildings. They were on all the traffic things, the poles. The deeper you got into Center City, the better they were dressed. they come out of the offices and so forth. Ticker tape, and it's something you never forget, you know? Oh. I wish I had a camera to record it, but I have the memories.
Yeah. Hey, also, because, again, you're right in the middle of all the action, you always want to know, like in baseball, you want to know what the pitcher is talking to the catcher about when they have the meeting at the mound, or when the pitching coach comes out. What, with you, you're right in between, or you were right between the two penalty boxes. What if there's a big fight between Ty Domi and some, one guy in the Flyers, what are they talking about? Or what are some of the interactions that you can remember between, opposing players after they've, both been sent to the penalty box? And actually,
sure.
Since I mentioned Ty Domi, talk about that when the Flyers fan jumped into the penalty box.
Yeah, I will. First of all, I know the answer to the baseball answer for the coach and all. It's candlesticks.
Candlesticks. Right. That's right. Classic line, Lou. Classic.
Yeah, that's the best, man. So they would. There were different guys. Guys that, were looking for a fight to get their reputation up. I remember Brashear when he was with Washington once fought with the fridge, and a lot of times guys would ask for a fight because they're starting to get their reputation as a fighter. And I remember them coming in and sitting down, and Brashear was a veteran at that point, so he wouldn't say much. He just kind of looked it over, and Brashear said, hey Brash. He said, yeah. He said, thanks for the fight. I really appreciate it. He said, no problem, man. Anytime, Yeah.
That's great.
And other guys are like, really upset with one another, calling each other names. And, again, it's not printable, and you don't want to put it on the air. But, some guys will do that. You don't find a lot of it anymore. Obviously me being in a different position now, I don't see it at all, but, it would have probably happened the other night when we had that dust up with Seattle. Was it Seattle? Lost track of who we played in the second game. I guess it was Seattle.
Kraken, yep.
And sure enough, our guy 44 there knocks their guy down after he messed with Giroux. And then, Sealer picks on Jamie Oleksiak. He's like 6'7". He's like a giant, and he can really fight. So he took a few in the helmet. I don't know if Oleksiak put ice on his hand, but he would. But there's always ice packs and things like that, and guys break fingers, and but that doesn't stop them from being mad at one another. They are legitimately upset with one another when they start that.
Yeah, and speaking of being upset with each other, there was going back in time, Ottawa Senators. I remember they. They did something. Well, a guy, I think, slashed Mark Recchi, and I think Recchi, did he break his arm, or he had a fractured his forearm or something? And remember, there was then the next time they played, it was at Spectrum, and talk about that. And didn't you say something inadvertent over the microphone?
Yes, I did. First of all, the Ty Domi thing. When Ty used to get in the box, they'd have to do certain things. And one of the things they did with him, they put an extra 2 feet of plexi, or maybe 18 inches of plexi, on the back of the visiting penalty box. Well, the challenge is that they didn't raise the stanchion by the 18 inches. They kept the same stanchion. So when that guy leaned over after he was sprayed, Domi sprayed him, it snapped, and he and the glass came right in the box, at which point Domi pulled his jacket over his head and started to hit him.
Yeah.
Then the referees in there, you know, I mean, it was chaotic. It was wild, but he's a good guy, but he could take a punch. If you're a cement head, you know, I mean.
Well, I think they became friends afterwards, right? Didn't that guy, that fan, like he invited Ty Domi, invite him up, he and his family up to Toronto.
Is that right?
Yeah, to watch a game. And they kind of
incredible friends. Incredible. Incredible. Yeah. What was that other thing that I interrupted?
The center, the Ottawa Senators, remember the recce? Then they all said it was basically everybody getting in the box the next game.
Yeah, well, there were a number of fights, and then it got down to the point where there were hardly any people left, and I was way behind on calling, you know, in the last period, calling the penalties. You know, there'd be four guys off, and I'm in the middle doing them. They face off, and there's four more guys. And finally, you know, they were doing it. If they didn't wait for the guy to drop the puck, they'd get a misconduct. So they didn't want to do that. Of course, they were throwing them off anyway. And everybody fought everybody. And I finally said, oh, no. I mean, I was watching had the mic open, and I was dealing with, I think that's what it was. And I'm reading one bunch of penalties, and here comes like the third bunch after I'm already a couple behind. And it's not like they're going to wait for the announcer. But, you know, the headsets went crazy. They went crazy on the headsets when they heard that one. So,
all right.
Yeah, I do. I said some things. I remember once coming into a game, and it was a boring game. We were ahead like 8 or 9 to nothing over Colorado. And, you know, we're looking around. We're looking for girls. And sure enough, I looked down against the glass, and there's a cute blonde down there, short hair, ski jacket on, you know, just come from the a tan just came from the mountain or something like that up there in Poconos. So I said to the guy next to me, I said, boy, there's a good-looking blonde down there in the first row, at which point my phone rings. And Joe Cadillac says, to the right or the left?
The microphone was on?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes,
darn
sir.
Microphone.
Yeah. And we were in the midst of that 35-game unbeaten streak then, so right. Nobody seemed to care.
No, when things are going good, stuff like that just –
Well, yeah, all, and then all also, Lou, I think you were the on a T-shirt because I remember when they had those glow-up, they gave everyone that bracelets, bracelets went on the ice, and then you got upset at the fans, rightfully so, and I think based on what you said, they made some T-shirts, right?
They did. It was the playoffs, and one of our guys ran somebody behind the net, and some of the bracelets that they used to do a light show came out, maybe, you know, like 100 of them or something like that. They sweep them up, and old Dvorsky's the ref goes over to me and says, no more bracelets, Louie, no more bracelets. I said, okay, no problem. So I just said something about throwing stuff on the ice. And then next thing you know, bingo, one of the guys does it again, and the arm goes up. We call another penalty, and by then, here comes some more bracelets. Ugh. So he says, you got to talk to them. So I did talk to them, and I basically said, you know, you got to have some class here. Show some class, you know. I mean, it's just Philadelphia, you know. Don't do it. And I remember being in the Acme, and my phone rang, and PR guy says, one of the marketing guys says, I'll tell you what, he says, I got something to tell you about the game Sunday. This was a Friday night. I said, yeah. He said, we're going to put you on a T-shirt, Stay Classy Philadelphia. Hmm. I said, you are? So, I mean, I was stunned, you know, and I said, well, if you got to do it, you got to do it. I mean, you do what you want to do. Because they already had them printed, I guess, or pay or started. But we gave out T-shirts like every night back then. And that seemed to be the right thing to do. And I still have people that ask me to sign them and send me pictures wearing their Stay Classy T-shirt. So, it's been a real real run, I'll tell you.
Well, and you know what? Something like that, Lou, I know it's not calculated, but, you know, you were, you know, being honest. I think Philadelphia fans just love that authenticity. You know, we had Harry Callis, who was a broadcaster, you know, certainly. But, you know, I think the one thing people loved Harry because he was kind of the everyman. You know, we'd win the when we won that first, you know, division series in 76, you know, Harry's down there getting sprayed and, you know, he's crying at the end of the broadcast. And, you know, it just shows you how, you know, people really do, you know, appreciate that.
Well, I certainly did. And I felt the same way about Harry. I love Harry. And, you know, it's been a privilege to do the stuff I've done. Mm. And, you know, still at it, just a little bit different position, but still having fun with it. We'll see, you know, as this team goes forward. They're certainly changed. We'll see a little bit more of it tonight. Bruce DeLine is in, and he's a difficult guy to play against. So he adds another dimension to the rough and tough. I guess we're getting back to it to a certain extent. Right. We just have to remember to be able to kill the penalties. That's all.
But other than that, you like the team, Lou, this year?
I do, and I like the team if, you know, Carter Hart can really get back to the form that he needs to be in. Martin Jones, the same thing. He's got it tonight, so hopefully he'll do well. But, yeah, they've added some things, you know. They get some goal scorers now, Atkinson, Derek Brassard. It changed a little bit. Somebody to add to, you know, the guys that we have, like, you know, with Giroux and Konechny and Couturier, you know. You go two lines deep that are tough now, and they can score. So, you know, you've got Scott Lawton as your third line. And
it's pretty good.
He's a hell of a player.
Yep.
Oh, well, he can really play. He can do everything, you know. Reminds me of Bill Barber back in the day.
That's quite a talent.
Billy could do everything.
That's quite a compliment
Billy could
there.
Do everything.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Well, John and I, you know, we're this baseball season's over, Lou, so, you know, we'll be watching for sure. John, you got something over there for Lou. Well, did you warn Lou, by the way?
I don't know if I did. So, Lou, I apologize if I didn't. But I do have a quick quiz we give all of our guests, and it's about your life. So it should be, it's multiple choice, and there's 8 questions. Should go pretty quick. And the bar we set is about 6 out of 8. So I think you can get that. And Tom, what does Lou win?
Let's see. What does Lou win? How about
tickets to any game he wants to at the Phillies next year?
There you go. Just give us a call and we'll hang out with Lou.
You and your family. All right.
I love it. Okay.
All right.
Fire away.
And before we even get to that, I know that you grew up a Phillies fan. I know you're a fan of all the sports. You mentioned you grew up in Southwest Philly. So, you know, I guess you fought the Whiz Kids and some of those teams in the 60s, right?
Or something. Yeah. In fact, I was born in 45, so in 50, my dad took me down to the airport to see the Whiz Kids come in with their airplane. I remember that.
Wow, is that right? That's awesome, as they came off the plane.
Back in the old airport, you know, what it is now. I don't know what it is now. Huh. There's maybe knocked down, but that was pretty cool, I must admit. Wow. I don't remember a whole lot of it, but I remember that.
But you'd get to Connie Mack, I guess. Would you go to a lot of Phillies games?
Not really a whole lot of them. What we used to do is, it was a promotion from a cookie company, Berry's Cookies. And if you save enough box tops, you can get in free.
Nice.
My buddies and I would always tell everybody we'd collect them from everybody in the neighborhood and go to games. And,
that's great.
Yeah, I remember Stan Lapata once hitting the ball over the left field stands. Hmm. So funny things you remember.
Yeah. Huh. All right, here we go. 8 questions, as I mentioned, multiple choice. The first question to Lou Nolan. You went to West Catholic Preparatory High School. Which of these celebrities did not go to West Catholic? I'm going to mention 3 celebrities that went to West Catholic and 1 did not. You got to tell me the one that did not. All right.
Oh boy. Okay.
So
let's go.
A is Big Daddy Graham, comedian, actor, writer, WIP radio personality, who unfortunately just passed away. Tremendous guy. Love Big Daddy Graham. B is Match Game 76 contestant and celebrity Charles Nelson Reilly. C is Jim Murray, founder of the Ronald McDonald House and former GM of the Eagles. And D is actor Peter Boyle, whose fans can see him in Everyone Loves Raymond. And he was also the Frankenstein in Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein. So is it Big Daddy Graham, Charles Nelson Reilly, Jim Murray, or Peter Boyle?
B, Charles Nelson Riley.
Nelson Riley. I always have a Match Game 76 person on there.
I always forget about Peter Boyle going there. That is awesome.
Yes.
That is
All right, you're one for one.
We were probably the only high school around.
Question number two. Your first year as PA announcer was the 72-73 season. Who was the oldest Flyer on that team? Okay, the oldest Flyer on that team. Was it Wayne Hillman, Ed Van Impe, Barry Ashby, or Simone Nollet?
Ed Van Impe.
No, Wayne Hillman was a little older. I think Wayne Hillman was 34. It's close. That was a tough one.
Sorry.
Was he
still with the team then?
Yes. Well, it said it. Yes.
Sure?
According
to
my research, but I always flub at least one question, so we'll see.
John's research.
I'll go back.
John doesn't have much of a research department.
All right. This is a no-brainer. You announced the Frozen Four in 2014. You had Minnesota, North Dakota, Boston College, and Union. Who won?
Oh, that's easy. Union.
I know that with a Shane Ghost, with a ghost, right?
The ghost, yep.
All right. Very good.
The ghost, during the game, I'm announcing the goals and so forth, and I looked at stuff afterwards. They won 7-4, I think. He was plus seven.
Plus seven. How about that?
Wow. Took over.
Unheard of right there.
Yeah.
All right. You also did, you've done tons of, we didn't even get to your, you know, I wish we had like 2 hours with you because you've announced so many different things, the Olympics, but you also did the 2014 NHL entry draft. And the draft featured the first ever selection of a player from Australia, or Oceania, you want to call it, the continent. Who was that player from Australia? Well, you can do more from the you can knock people off. Aaron Ekblad, A. B. Sam Reinhart, D. C. David Pastrnak, D. Nathan Walker. So is it Aaron Ekblad, Sam Reinhart, David Pastrnak, or Nathan Walker?
I'll have to go A because I don't really know.
Yeah. Nathan Walker. Sorry.
I have no idea.
That was a tough one.
I'm glad you didn't use me as your lifeline, Lou, because I had no idea.
That was a tough one. All right. Well,
I didn't even know I had a lifeline.
You have a lifeline.
Can I make a call on that? I'll call Gary Bettman.
There you go. Call Bettman.
All right. Who is the all-time Flyers leader in penalty minutes with 1,815? Is it Holmgren, Moose DuPont, Dave Schultz, or Rick Tocchet?
Tocchet
is correct.
Yep, that one I knew.
All right, you got that one. You were the PA announcer for the Phantoms during the 2004-05 season when the NHL season was canceled due to the lockout. Who was the leading point scorer for the Phantoms that year with 65? Was it R.J. Umberger, Jonathan Sim, Patrick Sharp, or, as you said, the Fridge? Todd Fedoric.
The Phantoms?
For the
Phantoms we're talking about, right?
Yep, Phantoms, 2004-05. Leading point scorer for the Phantoms the year you did their PA announcing, was it R.J. Umberger, Jonathan Sim, Patrick Sharp, or Todd Fedoric?
Wow. Well, I don't think Fedoric would ever get 65 points. And I'm not sure that Sharp ever played for the Phantoms.
So
what were the other two?
Jonathan Sim and R.J. Umberger.
Oh, boy. I'm taking Sim.
Oh, it was R.J. Umberger.
Yeah.
That's all right.
I'm never going to break any records on the quiz.
You're still getting the tickets, though. You only have two more questions.
Yeah, we're still going to hang out with Liz.
We're still going to get you tickets. All right. This is bad on my part. I just wanted to showcase all the things you did. And one of the cool things you did, the NCAA Final Four in 1976 at the Spectrum. I don't know if you know that.
With Bobby Knight
in his plaid jacket.
Indiana.
Do you remember who was the tournament's most outstanding player if I give you the multiple choice?
Maybe.
All right. It was either A, Indiana's Scott May, B, Michigan's Ricky Green, C, Indiana's Kent Benson, or D, Indiana's Quinn Buckner. So was it Scott?
I'll take Buckner.
It was Kent Benson. Yeah, did you know
that? I remember that. Yeah.
Kent Benson?
Yes, he had a big game. He had a lot of rebounds and points that game in the championship.
Oh, well.
That's all right. But you know what? If you get this last one, We are going to get you tickets anywhere you want
to
sit.
Because Lou can't get tickets to a Phillies game,
yeah,
I'm sure.
But go ahead. This is going to be a special one.
Right.
Fanatic seats.
Oh, right? Yes. Yes.
All right. As we mentioned, the Flyers played the Red Army in 1976. Which Russian did Ed Van Amp lay out, causing the Russian coach Konstantin Loktev to pull his team off the ice when no penalty was called? Was it Vladimir Petrov, Valery Karlamov, Anatoly Fursov, or Viktor Kuzkin?
Karlamov
is correct. And there you have it. All right, Lou. You did a good job. Yeah, That was a hard one.
That was a layup. You guys remember that. That's a layup.
John, you mentioned the Fanatic seats, but I got to ask Lou, because I'm best friends with the Philly Fanatic, but I heard that. I'm a very good friend of Gritty, who, you know, is awesome. What you think when Gritty hit the scene, Lou?
First game, I wasn't quite sure. I had gotten a little preview, a little snapshot of what he looked like, and I said, But then his personality took hold. First game, fans didn't know if they have food, they have not food. And then we put him out there in the second period, and he put a hip check on a couple of goalies that were in a goalie race.
Okay.
And he could skate. He does everything. And the fans began to like him. I like the guy. The guy's a great guy. He's nuts. Stuff he does, he's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, his sidekicks get hit with pies and balls and hammers and wrenches and all kind of stuff like that.
Well, that's interesting you say that, Lou, because I think your reaction was kind of how Philadelphia fans thought at first. You know, at first weren't sure, and then once he started doing his thing, you know, he won him over.
I also think it was once he became fodder for the national media, then all of a sudden,
Pittsburgh Penguins,
right?
Yeah,
and then
the
I think Philadelphia said we can bust on him, but you can as a Pittsburgh or anywhere else in the country, and that's when I think the fans.
That one.
Galvanized around.
Yeah, they rallied around. Philly Gritty. Rallied around Gritty.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, good stuff, Lou. Well, we can't thank you enough for coming on. John and I, you know, we're just kind of real happy to know you and honored to know you and just big fans. So,
congrats on the 50 seasons.
Yeah, 50 years. I mean, great.
So. And the Philadelphia Sports Hall of Fame.
What's that?
And the Philadelphia Sports Hall of Fame, they've several years back.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Going to be at the banquet this year, so it's a good one. Maybe I'll see you guys there.
Awesome. Well, great, Lou. Again,
listen, I appreciate the chance to be on with you. And, you know, it's one of the guys from the neighborhood. That's me. So, you know, just happened to talk for a hockey team. That's the way it is.
Well, good luck this season. Good luck tonight. We're taping this on Wednesday, so good luck against the Bruins. And we'll go from there.
Yeah, sounds great.
Sounds
Luke.
Good, guys.
Thanks again.
It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks,
Thank
Lou.
You. Bye-bye. Right.
There he is, John. Awesome. Lou Nolan. You know, and there really is something to be said for, well, you can have 50 years in one place doing anything. I think it's authentic. And he's a Philly guy, you know, doesn't walk around, you know, with airs and just, you know, he's one of us. And, you know, what a career he's made out. And he's one of those guys who I think he appreciates every moment he has doing that job.
Yeah, you're totally right. And, you know, you mentioned Dan Baker also, you know, 50 seasons. And then you look at over the Sixers, you know, Matt Cord hasn't been doing it 50 years, but Matt's been doing that for, I don't know, 25 years, right?
Yeah, long time.
For a long time.
Yeah.
You know,
Zink before it. I forgot. I meant to ask Lou about Zink. He probably had a couple Zink stories, but.
Well, because Zink, I think, did a little bit, might have. Zink did a little Phillies, right?
He was the longtime Sixers guy.
I know, but didn't he do a little Phillies or not really?
Not
I thought
I know.
Larry Shank did some research that
really?
That Scott Brandt sent to me. So I think he threw that to me to throw me off because he wanted to have me make a mistake.
Oh, damn. Dan doesn't miss a game. So Dan's been doing it since, you know, 72, right?
Yeah,
so,
no, I think this is like well before that. But I'm probably wrong. Lou Nolan is a Philadelphia treasure.
Yes.
And the Flyers organization. Love those guys. I mean, Bernie Parent, Joe Watson, Bob Kelly, the Hound. You know, you still see these guys. You know, once you win a championship in Philadelphia, you're never forgotten.
Yeah,
you're
still
always
here.
A hero.
And they're just all great guys. And you know, we had that a couple of years ago. We had a Flyers night here. We couldn't do it last year because of the pandemic, and then this year it didn't happen. But I think Lou came over and did the starting lineups, and you know, I just love how. I always love it when the four teams are all on the same page.
Yep, you know? And we're very good with the relationships with all the different teams.
Oh, for sure. All right, John. Well, another great episode. All right. Thanks to Lou Nolan. And thank you, John, for being you.
Thank you, Tom, for being you.
All right, brother. All right, everybody. Thanks again for tuning in. And we will see you next time on Phillies Backstage.